Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, sorry, afterwards you're repeating. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya, what are you saying? Lord Vishnu, save me. Such glorification is simply another form of blasphemy. Purport. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a little embarrassed by the Bhattacharya's statement. Therefore, he uttered the name Vishnu to save himself. The Lord herein confirms that if one is overestimated, glorification is just another form of blasphemy. In this way, he protests this so-called offensive statement. The translation once again, kind of repeat. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya, what are you saying? Lord Vishnu, save me. Such glorification is simply another form of blasphemy. Om Jnanatimidandasya Jnananjana Shilakaya Chakshuranmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastarya Bhutale Shri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirivishesha Shunyavadi Paschasate Satarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Srivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Vanchakalpa Trubhasya Kripa Sindhu Bhayavacha, Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Prabhus. I'd like to seek the blessings and the mercy of all the devotees who assembled, all the Vaishnavas unassembled as well online. Specifically like to welcome His Grace Yadavar Prabhu Ki Jai. Thank you for appearing once again, and may you remain with us for much, much longer. Yadavar Prabhu Ki Jai. Thank you. And welcome to all the other devotees. Hare Krishna. Thank you. Prabhus, this is it's full of drama here. Isn't it? It's a lot of drama. And the Lord, you know, literally covering His ears like this, you know, because He's being glorified by the Bhattacharya, Sarvabhuma. Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya, an amazing, amazing personality. In his late 70s, he's like the Advaita Acharya of Jagannath Puri. In Mayapur, we have Advaita Acharya, we see the Thakurani. And in Jagannath Puri, the Lord has Sarvabhuma with Sati Mata. Sati Mata is the consort of Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya. Sati Mata, why? Because she's the mother of Sati. Sati is the daughter. And as we go along in the Madhya Leela, there are nice, beautiful pastimes. And so Sati Mata is the daughter. And so here Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya is glorifying the Lord. But the Lord being the Lord, as we all know, He's not going to tolerate such glorification. So there's some interesting statements here. And when he's chanting Vishnu, Vishnu, because, you know, that's the custom. And it reminds me of one particular pastime which I came across recently of when Krishna is with Srimati Radharani in Vrindavan, who has not been to Vrindavan. Wow. Okay. One hand going up. You've got to go. Anyway, Krishna is in Vrindavan in Vraj, and he's with Srimati Radharani, and Krishna, they're at a place where he's kind of excavating clay. And from that clay, what he wants to do is kind of, you know, carve murtis of himself and Radharani. Interesting pastime. So Krishna is busy. Is anyone kind of, you know, done any pottery? Done pottery, isn't it? We used to, I mean, at school we were given lessons, but I was useless at it. The whole thing just, you know, collapses. The thing goes round, and that's pottery. So Krishna here has this clay, and he is nicely, you know, producing a couple of murtis. And he does one of himself first, and then he does one of Radharani. And when after that, and Radharani says, "No, Vishnu, Vishnu, this is not right. Vishnu, Vishnu," he's chanting. So Krishna is kind of alarmed. No, start again. So he then puts the clay back together because it's all wet, and then starts once again. Creates another two murtis. Vishnu, 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 no, this is not, do it again. So the Lord does this 3-4 times and he's creating beautiful murtis. But Radharani says, Vishnu, 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 not the right type. So then he's thinking, why is she behaving in such a manner? She says, well, you know, what's the problem? I'm creating these murtis of both of us. And you're just saying, Vishnu, Vishnu, not right. What's the problem? And then she says, Well, actually, what it is, you're creating beautiful murtis. But when you're putting them back together, that for me is overwhelming. Because this means we're one. Because that was the feeling she had. When she keeps seeing that, you know, he's putting with his nice, beautiful hands, because the Lord has amazing hands, doesn't he? Fingers. And then he puts them back together. And that's what really attracted her. So the Vishnu Vishnu is there, and that's the custom and the tradition that if you don't want to hear anything in life, if someone says something which is not quite palatable to you, then you say, Vishnu Vishnu, you cover your ears. And this is what's happening here. That's culture. Srila Prabhupada, I was listening to these little, you know, drops of nectar. And Prabhupada's mentioning that 1,000 Vishnus is equivalent to one name of Ram. I thought to myself, wow, yes, I've heard this before. But again, to be reminded, 1,000 Vishnus. So then I was thinking, well, why are we saying Vishnu? 1,000 Vishnus, one name of Lord Ram. Can you see the potency of Ram? 3 Rams is one Krishna. Prabhupada mentions this. And then he further mentions that this is the verdict. This is the verdict of Shastra. Hare Krishna, Hare Ram, Sita Ram is same thing, Prabhupada says. Hare Ram, Sita Ram, same thing. So of course, if for someone like Hanuman, because recently we had Ram Navami and Hanuman Jayanti. For someone like Hanuman, he's constantly chanting Ram, 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 24/7. Even when he's somewhat asleep, it's Ram, Ram. One time he's in the gardens of Ayodhya. And this is when, you know, everything is now very peaceful. The Lord has returned, Hanuman has returned, Sita Mataji has returned, Devi Sita, Mother Sita has returned, everyone's back. And of course, you know, Hanuman's there with them constantly. And he's in the garden and he's expanded himself because, you know, he can control any size he wants to be. And he's expanded his tail as well. He coils his tail and the tail becomes like a mattress. That's how he uses his tail. Of course, the tail is quite unique. Because as we know, Hanuman is an avatar of Lord Shankar, Lord Shiva. And when Lord Shiva came to know that Lord Ram is appearing and Ramayana and the pastimes of Ram is about to appear, he said to Parvati, he said, look, I've got to be included. I have to be involved in Ram Leela. And you know what? I'd like to go alone. I've had enough of all the women. I'd like to go alone. Parvati said, hang on a minute, you can't go alone. What am I going to do all alone here in Kailash? Well, you know, give me a little distance. Of course, Parvati doesn't want to leave, and so she expands as the tail of Hanuman. And hence we see that the tail is pretty independent. Even Bhim couldn't lift that tail. Anyway, so there is Hanuman. He's literally in meditation. He's in samadhi. He's sleeping. But he's murmuring. He's murmuring Ram, Ram, Ram in his sleep. Because, you know, that's what he has to do. And of course, Lord Shiva, he's thinking, okay, I wonder what things are like. So then he says to Parvati, of course, he's an expansion, he's left, but, you know, Lord Shiva is virtually Bhagwan Shankar. So he's still in Kailash, and he says to Parvati, should we go and check out the scene? Let's see what, you know, Hanuman's doing. So then they both go. Of course, Mother Sita, realizing that they're about to appear in Ayodhya, so Mother Sita arranges a humongous feast. There is a banquet, beautiful, on the dining, you know, on the dining table. In Buckingham Palace, you have a humongous dining table where the king now and the queen would, you know, entertain. So like that, Ayodhya has a humongous dining table and this banquet is laid out. And of course, you know, our Hanuman is in the garden murmuring his Ram, Ram, Ram. Shankar Bhagwan, Parvati Ma appear, and they're just about to sit on the dining table, and they both ask that, where's Hanuman? Because they've really come to see him. And they're told by Lord Ram, well, I think he's in the garden. So they both go out there, and they go out and they come near Hanuman. Hanuman is much, much larger, and then, you know, he then gains consciousness, as it were. He's snoring, and his snoring is the murmur of Ram. Yeah. Shri Radha Goklananda ki jai, Shri Shri Sitarama Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Gonitai Bhagwan ki jai. So when Shankar Bhagwan and Ma Parvati come near, he regains consciousness, and then he's invited inside. And of course, he pretty much has all the eatables. He's just so ecstatic. So this is, you know, for Hanuman, instantaneously he will chant Ram. We are Gaura Bhakta, so if something kind of happens suddenly, then you'd chant, you know, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, like that. The custom is there. That's instantaneous. That's what one does. Lord Ram instructs brahmanas. These are important instructions given to the brahmanas because he has a lot of dealings with brahmanas. If you look at the Ramayana, you'll find that. And he mentions that in the scriptures, this is the instructions to the brahmanas, in the scriptures that he says that one should leave 100 tasks at hand to eat one's food. So the timing is saying to the brahmanas, when it's time to eat, you have to eat. Forget 100 tasks. Interesting. 1,000 tasks should be left, according to Lord Ram, to take bath. So the bathing is important. Brahmanas, 3 times. You have to bathe. Some devotees, you know, especially pujaris, would bathe more than 3 times. 100,000 tasks should be left. Very important. To chant the holy names. 1,000,000 obstacles. Interesting statistics given by Lord Ramchandra. 1,000,000 obstacles are said to be seen in the course of Gita, Bhagavad Gita recitation. Bhagavad Gita was sung initially millions of years ago by Surya Narayan. 10 million obstacles in the course of bathing in Ganga, and 100 million obstacles left while donating charity. These figures are given. In particular, what comes to mind is the chanting of the holy name. One's consciousness changes significantly before and after eating food, taking prasad. One's consciousness significantly changes before and after. And that's why, you know, taking prasad is such an important aspect, isn't it, in our life. Lord Ram mentions all this to all the brahmanas who were assembled there. So when it comes to taking the name of the Lord, in this case, Gauranga Mahaprabhu has taken it, that name, Vishnu, out of that etiquette of not hearing the glorification of himself. For he is acting as a pure devotee of the Lord, as Srimati Radharani. And we see in the Nectar of Devotion, which has to be quoted so often, because the Nectar of Devotion is indeed our manual. So we see that Srimati Radharani does this incredibly, incredibly well. It's mentioned in the Nectar of Devotion, chapter 28, entitled Existential Ecstatic Love. Page 237, I quote, "When a person blames himself for committing an inappropriate action, his feeling is called guilt." So one day, it's mentioned, one day Srimati Radharani was churning yogurt for Krishna. At that time, the jeweled bangles which she's wearing on her hands were circling round and round, and she was also chanting the holy name of Krishna, remembering Krishna. But then, all of a sudden, this is what's been mentioned by Srila Prabhupada in the Nectar of Devotion, all of a sudden, she thought, "I am chanting Krishna's name. What if my superiors will hear me?" And the superiors are the mother-in-law and the sister-in-law. So she's very conscious of, if they hear me chanting Krishna's name. So this is chanting in guilt. Never come across it, really. How can one be chanting in guilt? And by this thought, Srimati Radharani became over-anxious. This is an instant feeling of guilt in devotional service when chanting. Lord Chaitanya, specifically in this verse, is stating here to Sarvabhum Bhattacharya, glorification is simply another form of blasphemy. I mean, that's a pretty heavy statement towards the end of this translation. So, you know, I really enjoy glorifying devotees, especially on their birthdays. You know, it's a really nice feeling. But then you've got to kind of hear, you've got to be careful. Don't overdo it. Because naturally, the devotee does not want to be glorified. That's the natural humility of a Vaishnava. And of course, if you kind of glorify constantly, then, you know, here Mahaprabhu is saying is blasphemy. So this is quite an interesting statement. Now, this is really interesting, hence we naturally have to safeguard from it. But don't safeguard too much, because, you know, we have to naturally glorify devotees. It's a bit of a, you know, a catch 21, 22 situation, what to do. So in this regard, once again, if we turn to the Nectar of Devotion, page 141, chapter 18, it's mentioned as attachment can be invoked by the association of a pure devotee, so attachment to Krishna can also be extinguished by offenses committed at the lotus feet of a pure devotee. So the glorification of a pure devotee is there, naturally. Don't upset that devotee. To be more clear, by the association, Prabhupada mentions, to be more clear, by the association of pure devotee, attachment for Krishna can be aroused simply by the association of a pure devotee. That attachment of the Lord can be aroused. But if one commits offense at the lotus feet of a pure devotee, one's shadow attachment, or para means shadow attachment, can be extinguished. And he further explains that this extinguishing is like the waning of a full moon, which gradually decreases and at last becomes dark. I mean, that's very, very fearful, that this attachment, any little attachment which we have, which I certainly have, if it's covered, it's doomsday. Doomsday. You know, fatal. Very, very fatal. One should therefore be very careful while associating with the devotees to guard against this extinguishing, the fear of extinguishing. Not upset in any way. And believe you me, Prabhus, it's a tough one, especially if you're in management, which is a real headache, absolute headache. In management, it's a pathetic situation to be in. To guard against this, and we see many examples are given to us in scripture, many examples in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. One which comes to mind is that of the offense which has been somewhat periodically to Haridas Thakur. Time and time again, you know, we see individuals even whipping him in the market. I mean, that's, you know, unbelievable. When he enters the province of Benapur. Benapur is where Ramchandra Khan is. And Ramchandra Khan is an affluent, you know, zamindar who is a tantric person, very, very powerful. He's the governor, literally. He collects all the taxes, exceptionally wealthy. And when this humble, pure personality, the Namacharya, enters the province and you know, sets up camp. And setting up camp is a little hut. He plants his tulsi in front of the hut. And all he wants to do is chant. Literally, you know, 22 and a half hours of the day, he's chanting 300,000 names of the Lord. You know, he's not going to have much time for anything else. He doesn't want to be engaged in anything. He doesn't really want to meet anyone. And yet, Ramchandra Khan is threatened. He's threatened. He's feeling very insecure. He's feeling, you know, envious, and jealousy is there, naturally, because the personality who's in his province is more and more famous than him. More and more persons are going to see him, taking in darshan, not disturbing him, but just taking darshan of this exceptional personality. So he's thinking to himself, we can't carry on like this. What about me? You know, what's going to happen to me if more and more people are going to, you know, fall down at his feet? No, you know, people are going to ignore me. So he then, you know, attempts to approach numerous high society ladies. Can you please do something? Go and defame him. All these ladies, they understand that, hang on a second, we don't really want to do this. And they say, no, I'm sorry, we can't. Not going to get involved. And then eventually he abducts the parents of one particular high society lady, referred to as Maya Devi. He abducts her parents and blackmails her that if you do not do this deed, you will not meet your parents again. So this individual had no option but to enter the transcendental hermitage of the Namacharya and attempt to defame him. Of course, that was her greatest blessing. And as we know the story, we know very well, eventually then, after three or so nights, you know, she becomes a pure devotee, hearing the holy name of the Lord. This is the potency of the holy name of the Lord. Even when Gauranga Mahaprabhu is chanting Vishnu, Vishnu, there's tremendous potency there. Of course, the person chanting it is the Lord himself. And by her hearing night after night, she's purified. And eventually, when the Namacharya sets her up and she's like the Namacharya, she becomes the guru. And he then moves on. She's thinking, you know, you're leaving me. You know, you're the spiritual master. And he said to her that I only came and remained here because of you. Otherwise, I would have left, and I don't want any disturbance because I have to leave. Otherwise, the Khan Ramchandra, he will, you know, do something else. He won't give up, for that's his tendency. And so then the Namacharya leaves. And of course, Ramchandra Khan, he doesn't learn his lesson. He still has that mentality. And it's so unfortunate, because when the news spreads that the Namacharya has moved on and Gauranga Mahaprabhu hears of it, and he turns to Lord Nityananda, and this is coming in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a description coming. And he turns to Nityananda and he said, can you go and find out? Go and find out what's happened. The Namacharya has been disturbed once again, and you know, an offense has been committed. Who is this person, this zamindar? Who is he? Find out. And why has this happened? Nityananda initially says, the Lord says, well, why don't you go? And of course, the Lord says, well, it's better you go. You know, you're far more merciful than I am. I'll probably, you know, obliterate this individual. I'll take my Sudarshan out and I'll destroy not just the individual, but the entire province. And of course, Nityananda does go there. The Lord appears there. And Ramchandra's, you know, due to this offense, his intelligence somehow is so messed up. Instead of meeting the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the most magnanimous, merciful personality present, who could, you know, benedict absolutely anyone, the most sinful personality who he could benedict, and yet this Ramchandra Khan, he sends his servant. I mean, what kind of planet is he on? The Lord appears in the courtyard. He sits in the corner of the courtyard on top of the Durga Mandal, the Pandal, Durga Pandal. Each Bengali palace house has the position of Ma Durga. That's, you know, tradition. And here in the palace of, you know, Ramchandra Khan, the courtyard, the Lord sits in the corner waiting. Now, you know, this is a powerful personality. He's the Supreme Lord and is waiting for his host to come out. And the servant comes out. And the servant first says to Ramchandra Khan, are you sure you want me to go? You know who this is? This is, you know, it's like Mahasankarshan has appeared. The servant is thinking, do you have no intelligence? What's the matter with you? He's saying this, you know, he's referring like this. But Ramchandra Khan is fixed. Just say to him, I'm not here. I'm in an important meeting. What more, what more importance can this be? Anyway, the servant goes out and he says, my dear Lord, you know, he greets him the best way possible. Lord Nityananda's looking around. Where's your master? Where are the family members? You know, I don't come every day. I've come here. And the servant says, well, unfortunately, my master is a little busy. Busy? And yes, he's mentioned to me that, you know, rather than you being situated in the Durga Mandal, there you could, we have a very nice goshala, and you could be seated there because a lot of your entourage will turn up. And when your entourage comes, when Lord Nityananda, when he travels, you know, like millions of people are there. Gauranga Mahaprabhu, if you can imagine, when this is why he's moving from one place to the other. You know, as soon as he settles, it's like, you know, hundreds and hundreds of thousands upon thousands of people are there because they all want to take darshan. You know? And so he says to Lord Nityananda, when your entourage comes, there won't be enough room in the courtyard, so maybe you could just go in the goshala. Now, you don't say that. I mean, the servant is reluctant to say this, but he's been instructed to do so. And Ramchandra Khan, unfortunately, he does not come out of his palace. The Supreme Lord Nityananda, being so exceptionally magnanimous, merciful, is annoyed. And you don't want to be there when Lord Nityananda is annoyed. Lord Nityananda seldom is annoyed at anyone, for he's an avaduta. He's so merciful. And the Lord refers to the servant and he says to the servant, you say to your master that in 7 days the minister of the Nawab Hussein Shah, his governor, will come here and will accuse the Khan Ramchandra of taking funds and of misrepresenting him. And from the Goshala, you will be all converted into Mohammedans. Every one of you, the Ramchandra Khan will be converted. And from this very Goshala, calves will be slaughtered and forcibly meat will be given to your master. Now, this is exceptionally heavy when you come across this pastime. You know, converting to the Mohammedan, fair enough. Administering forcibly, you've got to take this. That's from your own Goshala. And of course, the servant was in absolute shock. He runs straight back into the palace. And he mentions to the master, Ramchandra Khan, that this is what the Lord has said. Now, again, the intelligence is so covered here. He has committed an offense to the Namacharya, to the representative of the holy name of the Lord, Haridas Thakur. From there, one thing after another, he's now committed an offense to the Lord himself. And instead of running out and grabbing the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda, instead of doing that, he says to the servant, immediately excavate the Durga Pandal, where the mandal, where the Lord was situated, excavate it, have nothing to do with it, obliterate that entire site. Thinking that if he destroys that area, you know, this curse will not manifest. Such is the bewilderment of the intelligence when offense is committed. Layers of bewilderment. And no doubt, Prabhus, I kid you not, in 7 days, the minister of the Nawab Hussein appears with his guards, and the Ramchandra Khan, the Khan Ramchandra, is accused of so many offenses. Yes, he's probably tucking away, you know, some amount of tax, no doubt. And that's being brought up. I want to see your accounts. So the accountant brings the chopras, the scriptures of accounts, and you can clearly see that there's some problem here. Immediately, the Khan Ramchandra, the Khan is a title actually, it's a Bengali title, Zamindar title, which was then taken by the Mughals. The Khan Ramchandra is immediately imprisoned, he's in jail. His two wives, his consorts, as it were, abused. His daughter-in-laws, he has three sons. His daughter-in-laws, daughters-in-law, they're all abused. The women are abused and locked away. The entire province of Benapole is in absolute turmoil. The residents of the province have to vacate. Time and time again, the Mohammedans plunder it again and again. It's like, it's insane. And still the Khan Ramchandra is just not understanding. Eventually, he's imprisoned. He's forced to become Mohammedan. That act is very simple. Simply by a lota, you know, you sprinkle water on top and you're converted into Mohammedan. But on top of that, forcibly administered the meat of the young calves which had been taken. And you're forced to do that, and still it's like, you know, not understanding what is happening. Intelligence covered, again, simply because of these offenses. To the extent that he's now, he's got jaundice, he's diseased. Now, generally, when the Namacharya is seemingly offended on occasions, the offender does kind of, you know, repents. We see that, and subsequently, Mahaprabhu himself is exceptionally merciful. But in this particular case, the Khan Ramchandra, he has to leave his body. What happened thereafter, unknown. So such an important example, and examples of this nature are there in scriptural injunctions. And simply by this offense of Namacharya and the pure devotees. So here, once again, referring back to the verse here, you know, in glorification of a pure devotee, in overestimating that glorification, it could also be somewhat blaspheming. For me, what comes to mind is having sweet dealings with Mother Kalangana. And, you know, I was always, I'd like to tease her because, you know, she was older. And on one occasion, I was teasing her. She had appeared in a function. We were having a function in Harrow, and she had come, and I was like the doorkeeper, and she came, and she said, "Are we here at the right place? This is the place of the function." And I said to her mother, no, you've come to the wrong place. You should go back to the manor, and it's on the other direction." You know, messing with her. And then she was turning around and she was about to leave. And then I said, no. And then she would say, "Prabhu!" You know, the way she says, "Prabhu, you are joking with me." So, of course, you know, that was one pure devotee we know. And dealings were very sweet. She was accustomed to making different, you know, types of medicinal liquids in thermos for the temple president, Chutidamapuru. And that went on for quite a while, because she was very concerned of his grace, Shruti Dharma Prabhu, his health and etc. and whatnot. And so on a couple of occasions, you know, she gave me the thermoses. And I said to her, is this for me? Shall I have it? No. Neela Madhava, not for you. For Shruti Dharma Prabhu. And then I said, well, he doesn't really need it. He doesn't like it anyway. I should have it. And she said, no. So, of course, you know, these were pleasing times. And I'm very conscious of these memories, nice memories. Prabhu, the time is ticking away. In conclusion, you know, today is indeed Ekadashi, and in literal sense, Varuthini. Varuthini Ekadashi means, Varuthini means protected. And it's quite, you know, just to dovetail it into the subject matter. Of course, we're protected by the Vaishnavas, provided we don't upset them. So Varuthini means protected. And so the devotees get protected from various negativities and evils by observing this Ekadashi. So, you know, if I had any sense, I would observe this Ekadashi because, you know, I'm in that category. But for breakfast, you know, I should be really fasting. For breakfast, I've already had a banana. But I should observe it, more consciously. So we observe Varuthini means protected, given protection by the observation of this particular Ekadashi Vrat. And so the Vaishnava devotees worship and offer prayers to Lord Vamanadev. Because if you look at our calendar, you know, the painting, I don't know where Yogi Prabhu selected it from. Yogi, incidentally, you know, His Grace Yogi Prabhu does our calendars. So he's put the nice painting of Lord Vamanadev. So this is the significance of today, Varuthini Ekadashi. And to conclude, Prabhu's, Sarvabhum Bhattacharya, he is glorifying Gauranga Mahaprabhu, and subsequently he so very sweetly gives us the 108 names of Gauranga Mahaprabhu. The Bhattacharya Sarvabhuma is mentioning that if one chants this great prayer with faith and transcendental devotion on Mahaprabhu's appearance on Gaurpurnima, this prayer, then one perpetually attains the fulfillment of their each and every pure desire, just simply by chanting the names of the Lord. Of course, if you were to, if the Bhattacharya chants these names in front of Gauranga Mahaprabhu, he's not going to be very happy. But the Bhattacharya is giving us these prayers. It's a series of 22 verses, and to go through them, time is of the essence. But I'll quickly just chant five verses and conclude with the sixth one. Very, very sweet verses. Namaskritya prabhakshyami deva devam jagat gurum nam nam ashotara shatam chaitanyas mahatmanah. O great soul, after offering obeisance unto the Lord of Lords, Mahaprabhu is the Lord of Lords, who is the spiritual master of the entire universe, I will now narrate 108 names of Lord Gauranga Mahaprabhu, Lord Chaitanya. Vishvambaro jita krodho maya deva manushya vigraha amai mai nam shresto varo desho dvijotamaha. Gauranga sustains the universe, is victorious over the influence of mundane anger, and he assumes the illusory form of a human. He is bereft of fraudulent behavior. Is the foremost of cheaters, interesting, appears in the best of land, and is the ultimate Brahmana. The third verse. Jagannatha Priyashtutaha Prittur Bhakta Mahamanaha Lakshmi Kantaha Sachi Putraha Premado Bhakta Vatsalyaha. Gauranga is the dearmost son of Jagannath Mishra, Jagannatha Priya. Jagannath Mishra, Gauranga is the devotee of his father, and he has great mental power. He is the beloved husband of the goddess of fortune, the son of Mother Sachi, the bestower of ecstatic, loving devotion, and he is very affectionate to his devotees. The fourth one, Dvija Priya Dvija Varo Vaishnava Prana Nayakaha Dvijati Pujakaha Shanta Shribasa Priya Ishwaraha. Gauranga is dear to the twice initiated Brahmanas. The twice initiated Brahmanas. He is the best among the Brahmanas, and he is the hero of the devotees. Life and soul. He is peaceful and saintly. He is very dear to Shribas Pandit, and he is the supreme controller. Fifth one. Tapta Kanchana Gaurangaha Shimba Griho Mahabhujaha Pita Vasa Rakta Pataha Shoda Bhujatva Chatur Bhujaha. His complexion is like molten gold, his arms very muscular. He wears yellow cloth as a sannyasi. He wears yellow cloth as a householder and red cloth as a sannyasi. He exhibits a six-armed form and also a four-armed form. So these are the very, very first five verses, very sweet. And of course, he concludes, the Bhattacharya concludes in a very unique way. He mentions, Aputra Vaishnavam Putram Labhyate Natra Samsayaha Ante Chaitanya Devasya Smritir Bhavati Shasvati. And he mentions, if a devotee couple wishes to have a child but are unable, then they will obtain a child without a doubt, and at the time of death they will attain remembrance of Sri Chaitanya Dev and they will enter his eternal pastimes. So I thought that was quite interesting. And he mentions the Bhattacharya, that Jagannath Mishra called his divine son Vishwambara, and Mother Sachi called him Nimai. The name Gauranga was given to Mahaprabhu when he took the sacred thread, the Brahman thread, Diksha, Upanayan. At school, they called him Nimai Pandit. His devotees called him Gauranga Prabhu or Gaura Prabhu. Gaura or Sri Gauranga Chaitanya, because he was engaged in awakening Sri Krishna, the Supreme Lord, in the hearts of men. So ultimately, he is Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And of course, he further concludes by chanting, very famous, Bhaja Gauranga, Kaha Gauranga, Laha Gaurangera Naam, Bhajagauranga, Bhajagauranga, Bhajagauranga Namare. Bhattacharya concludes, worship Gauranga, speak Gauranga, and chant the name of Gauranga. Worship Gauranga, worship Gauranga, the name of Gauranga. Chaitanya Bhagwat, that's in there. So these are the teachings subsequently after glorifying Gauranga Mahaprabhu in this verse, the 182nd verse, and Mahaprabhu stipulating that, hang on a minute, don't overdo it. And then subsequently, the Bhattacharya Sarvabhuma, he gives us these beautiful, beautiful series of verses. And it's mentioned that if one chants these verses on a daily basis, guaranteed liberation and success. If one chants on Gaur Purnima, of course, so many things are there, but the chanting of the Maha Mantra is the most important to us. And this is what's been stipulated. Prabhus, thank you so very, very much. It's almost 9 o'clock. I do apologize. Naturally, your prasadam awaits, and, you know, drop 100 tasks to take prasadam. Any questions? Yadubar Prabhu here. Prayojan Prabhu is also here. Mother is there. Any comments? Corrections gladly accepted. Yes, Prayojan Prabhu ki, Jay.
Protect us. Sorry, on Ekadashi, Ekadashi Prashad doesn't include grains in it. And apparently, the reason for abstaining from grains is that it's to protect us from the reaction of grains, which is absorb all the sinful reactions of all the people concerned with those foodstuffs. You know, so can you comment on that?
Well, you know, Prabhu, if you're in Jagannath Puri, you don't need to fast in Jagannath Puri. Jagannath Puri, you know, every hour on the hour, the Lord has chapan bhog. If you, I think it's like if you're below 5 or above 80 or something, you don't need to fast. That stipulation is there. But most certainly, yes, you know, it's mentioned that when one leaves the celestial realms, as it were, you know, you come down in the form of grain. That description is given in the Bhagavatam. So, yes, the taking of grain, you know, what you had mentioned is most certainly there. Fasting, naturally, for us, the observance of Ekadashi means to increase the remembrance of Lord Hari. And when one fasts, you know, you're meant to, you know, think of the Lord far more. Of course, you know, I always look at when Bhim Ekadashi is. Don't particularly look forward to it. Mm-hmm. And especially on numerous occasions, you know, it's fallen on my birthday, Prabhus, which means no cake. You know, so I have to look at the calendar every year. Of course, you know, the fasting has to be there. And on Bhim Ekadashi, we're meant to do Bhim Ekadashi every day. You know, you're actually meant to fast for 3 days, Dwadashi, Ekadashi, fast for. And there were, at one time, Prayojan Prabhu, I kid you not, in 1988, I came across devotees who were fasting for 3 days. And I kind of tried it. Because Shruti Nama Prabhu would force us to fast on Ekadashi. Because he was doing it, so we all had to fast. And that was Nirjala on Ekadashi. Yes, you know, ideally we should be fasting. And why? To remember the Lord. But, you know, for someone like me, fasting means I'm remembering what to eat. When is it breakfast time? I've already looked at the time for tomorrow. I think it's 5:36 to 10 something. So I've looked at it. But indeed, you know, grains are meant to be sinful. You know, the sinful aspect of it is there, and to refrain from it. Of course, the biologically, every fortnight, it is good to fast. Clears the system, as it were. It's healthy. So all these things are there. You know, that's the biological, but the spiritual sense, the Lord of Hari, the day of Lord of Hari. That is the significance and the remembrance of Lord Hari. Thank you. Jai Granth Raj, Srimad Chaitanya, Chaitanya Charitamrita Ki Jai.